Your name?
Zain El Amin.
Zain El Amin, the World Bank and IMF are in Washington, D.C. this weekend. Can we begin by you explaining what exactly is the World Bank? What is the International Monetary Fund?
Those are two financial entities that were established after World War II, sort of for the reconstruction, you know, of the countries that were defeated in these wars, and sort of reshaping the financial reshaping of the post-war Europe and so on. That role, when it was done with that task, it's now wielded to basically control and privatize third world economies. And the way they work is basically is they give out loans, and then they impose structural adjustment programs, which include privatization of the public sector, healthcare, education, etc. And it includes cutting back on, for example, wages and jobs that are, that are government jobs and so on. And so that's now how the role is changing. That's what its role has been for the past, you know, few decades.
If it's the World Bank, then why is it that each year they meet in Washington, D.C.? And this year, you just completed a run on the bank.
Yeah.
Normally, when people think of a run on the bank, it's the Depression, not having enough money. But it was a little,
You
guys jogged from Malcolm X Park down to, what is this, the IMF or World Bank near here?
Yeah. It's the IMF building's right there. Yeah.
So why do they meet in Washington, D.C.? They meet here each year?
They meet here each year, yeah. And this is where they congregate. I can only speculate, you know, on the obvious, which is Washington, D.C. is the capital of the world, really, in terms of, like, the United States right now is, its imperial ventures, has become the kind of Globocop. By being Globocop, whether it's superior in the efficiency of its economy or not, being a Globocop trumps everything. So it has a say in world economies because of its military might. And so this is the capital of the most powerful country in the world. It's an appropriate, an apt place for them to meet. But these institutions were founded by the United States. So,
You mentioned earlier as I was biking, you were jogging.
Yeah.
That before 9/11, September 11, 2001, there'd be a lot more people out here.
Yes. Yeah.
Why the change?
The change is that September 11th had a profound effect on the anti-globalization movement. It threw off with, like, first of all, you had nations that were suppressing, democracy for the sake of security. You had also NGOs locally. One of the things that happened, you had NGOs that basically got scared. NGOs that were being depended on by grassroots activists for providing resources to educate and to protest and to provide that. I remember when the last gathering, when there was this huge argument between activists that were organizing these mass demonstrations, and there was a lot of NGOs that basically said, we can't go out there and protest in the wake of September 11th. It'll compromise our financial aid and so on. And that's something just, that's a problem with the nonprofit industrial complex, as I call it, because of this dependence on foundations, and these foundations are usually more conservative than the causes that these nonprofits take on. So there was that, and there was many divisions within the movement on how to move forward in light of this huge catastrophe. I was with the side that thought more than ever we need, you know, to continue the anti-globalization movement. But unfortunately, this is the movement really diminished after that. Yeah.
IMF and World Bank are responsible for structural adjustment around the world. But I want you to talk about something similar right here at home. You've been active on the school front, and it's been a very interesting couple of weeks. The Washington Teachers Union, the leadership, has a tentative agreement with the city, and there's going to be private money, including from the Walton Foundation. And also today in the Washington Post, an interesting comment by at-large county council member Mark Elrich, who said that having to deal with the bond agencies for jurisdictions like Montgomery County, like D.C., but he was talking about Montgomery County, having to deal with the bond agencies who rate them is kind of like a third world country having to deal with the IMF. Just talk about some of your work locally on schools.
That's a very good point, in the sense that what's happening in schools right now is the parallels are obvious. The main drive of the World Bank and IMF is to privatize all public sectors in countries around the world, and that includes education. And part of that entails the cutting back of wages for teachers, for example, the privatization of schools, etc. In D.C., what's happening is that charter schools are being used as Trojan horses for privatization of education. So what you have is the Walton Foundation now, thanks to Fenty, is on the one hand, it is pumping loads of money into the charter schools. And on the other hand, as you mentioned, it's pumping money directly into the wages of these public teachers, which, you, as you know, and as anybody, any thinking person will knows, there's going to be consequences to that. Meaning, we're more beholden to Walmart, who doesn't even care for its own employees, than ever. Our children's future are beholden to such ridiculous things.
That's if the contract is approved.
Yes.
Because right now it's just been tentatively agreed by the leadership, and now the Washington Teachers Union has to vote on it. So there's still a chance, and you think that maybe it would not be wise to accept, I think it's $64.5 million in private money that would be flowing. And as Chairman Vincent Gray even said, what are they getting in return?
Yes. But even more important than that, it's not just the money that's going to the contract. It's what's been happening over the last years, which we expected. Why did we expect it? Not because we were brilliant, because privatizers use the same exact steps in privatizing any public entity. You know, right now, in October, they fired 225 or 23 teachers. Over 200 teachers, they fired them because they said we were in debt, right? Mm-hmm. Suddenly now they're saying we have a surplus, and people are calling for investigation and all that. It's no surprise to me. I mean, that was the whole point, is to fire. The whole scheme was to fire, to increase the autonomy of charter schools, to increase the infiltration of charter schools, to increase the infusion of private money, and to bust the union. Whatever excuse they can use, at the minute they saw an excuse to fire these teachers, they fired them. And a lot of, among those teachers were people that have been there, teachers have been there for a while, and that were active in the union. So it shows this trend of, you know, privatization and union busting go hand in hand. And that's the overarching trend. You know, whether they accept this contract or not, teachers are going to continue to be, if there isn't a real fight back, continue to be fired and replaced with, new recruits from Teach for America and that's not a plan for the long term, because that's a short term vision, because most of these recruits are using this as a stepping stone to go on to something else, you know.
Lastly, can you talk about school boards? I heard you mention earlier that as privatization increases, local control decreases, and we've seen school boards, apparently, I knew it happened here, but apparently they're being shuttered across the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's the part that goes hand in hand with privatization. Increasingly, for a country that shouts democracy, democracy for others, we are losing our democracy. We're losing the type, the quality of democracy, the type of democracy that we need most, and that is local democracy. We are losing control over how our schools are developed, how our education of our children is developed, because they're demolishing school boards across the country, and the mayoral takeovers are the trend right now. And mayoral takeovers meaning corporate takeovers, because the mayor is beholden to corporations, the school board is beholden to the parents.
And that is not what we read in the Washington Post, where it's constantly that Michelle Rhee is quote-unquote reforming the schools.
Yeah.
And they said, sometimes reform is difficult, is kind of how any dissent to the idea that things are getting better is, well, just because people are complaining, but you know, these changes that are good for us all, just sometimes they're difficult. That's the Washington Post coverage, essentially.
Yeah.
Which, can we also mention that the Washington Post owns Kaplan, the testing company, which makes a huge amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, in the financial world, some economists classify the Post as an education company, not as a newspaper, really. So of course they're fully complicit in this charter school movement. They fully supported. Their leading reporter is in love with Kip, and sees Kip as the little kibbutz in the middle of an occupied territory. You know, that's the kind of narrow vision that these people that are reporting on the city, not people that are indigenous to the city or care about it, but look at education as a consumer product, not as something essential, not as a right that we have, not as something that people should have control of.
What is Kip?
Kip is one of the most championed schools, basically in Southeast DC. It's expanded into several campuses. I can't keep up with how many campuses expanded, but the main thing is that Kip is being championed by the Obama administration. It's being championed by Oprah Winfrey and so on as an example. Because again, education is seen as a consumer product, and Kip is polished. But when you take a closer look, first of all, Kip is heavily funded by the Walton Foundation, meaning Walmart, and the kind of corporate culture that Walmart, the reason why Walmart likes it, because it imposes the kind of corporate culture, the sort of the Ottomans, you know, Ottoman worker, it imposes it on the students. Derision and punitive measures are, you know, and personal responsibility, which we saw from the Republican Revolution, that's the philosophy of the day there. And the most dangerous part about this is that, fine, if there was private money creating something that was beneficial to the society, you know, show me any evidence of it. What it's creating is private money is not acting on its own. The whole Bush administration drive behind No Child Left Behind was to decimate the public schools system. Grover Norquist, the Republican strategist, said, "We want to whittle away, at government until we can drown it in a bathtub." And the same, that was the drive behind No Child Left Behind. There's a failing school. What do? Underfund it, punish it till destroy it, replace it, have a charter school go inside it and use its resources, etc. Take over the structure, and so the whole thing about what's happening with No Child Left Behind, it works hand in hand with this privatization of education, and That's why the Walton Foundation supports No Child Left Behind and supports the charter school movement, you know.
Thanks, Zain El-Amin.
Sure.